We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
Welcome to the Advanced Sports Analytics Show here on Roto Grinders. I'm Jordan Cooper, a.k.a. Blender Ed, a.k.a. Blender HD, a.k.a. hopefully on top of you on Sunday's GPP leaderboards. Join with me, as usual, the man behind the model. It's Stuart Gibson, as well as we get a special appearance. He was on the first show. The man that maybe is more often on top of me on the GPP leaderboards. It's Brandon Adams. So, Brandon, we haven't seen you in a couple of weeks. How's your NFL season going?
It's going pretty well. I am showing a profit, which is always good. I've been running good in Showdown. I know part of my Showdown process, by the way, is to listen to your Showdown rundowns.
So basically, you're playing all the garbage players and hopefully and no correlation and just hoping to be unique and a garbage lineup wins.
Yeah, I've been running really good in Showdown. I had one. It was a $470 qualifier for the championships, and I ran one lineup and got there on Thursday. That was pretty exciting.
But this past Sunday, did you go against the ASA show? We typically talk about the high total games. You love the high total games. The lowest total game last week was the highest total game. And even if you stacked it, you probably still lost because you needed to play Chase Claypool and Travis Fulgham. They weren't in my player pool. I'm going to kind of assume when they're sub 1% owned that you didn't have them either.
I didn't have them. It is amazing, though, in the Millionaire Maker, with a 250,000 lineups, someone just always has the nuts. It's so funny. Like, you scroll through and someone just has it. It doesn't matter what it is. Someone has got like the perfect Claypool lineup.
Well, isn't that a similar concept in poker, implicit collusion? Similar to, you know, if you're playing a hand with and everyone's in it, right? If everyone calls your raise and most likely one pair is not going to win, some garbage hand out of your nine opponents at a 10-handed table is going to show up with something better than aces, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. People will go deep deep in the depth chart and show up with all the other spots. It's astonishing.
So Stuart, last week, we were accurate last week, even though, you know, obviously the lowest total game being the highest total one, but the highest scoring team was the predicted highest scoring team, the Chiefs, even though they weren't the chalk on the slate. They were like the third highest owned team. They were the one that I was the most exposed to, but the people that went with the Dallas Giants game, like they didn't get there obviously with Dak's injury. So that ruined you in the quarterback slot. And the Texans, although, yeah, I mean, they did well. I mean, Watson and Cooks, but Fuller didn't get there and the run back didn't get there. So it shows, Stuart, that still targeting the high probability teams can be profitable, even if they're going to be owned, but just not at the extent in which they really should be.
Yeah. Do you think that under ownership is a function of just people's price sensitivity? Because, I mean, naturally, like the higher probability games are going to be more expensive. Or is it this kind of, I don't know, trying to over project the field's gravitation toward that game? Like, you know, if everyone is like, oh, well, I couldn't possibly own, you know, the best team because they're the best team and everyone is going to own them. You know, does that like fear of, you know, being, I guess, on like the highest perceived highest total team actually gravitate people away? It's actually something we've seen a good bit this year. I mean, I feel like when, you know, Russ in Seattle popped off, or, you know, Dallas, I think the second round popped off, like, you know, they could be fairly easily projected, not easily, but it was reasonable to project them as like just the you know, highest scoring game, yet they weren't like as chalky as you might have expected. You know, I wonder if that's going to be a trend continuing forward this year, or if there will be some, ownership correction towards these high total teams. I mean, yeah, as Kansas City, I played a decent bit of like Lamar and pass catchers, and that was like the second highest total game, or we had projected second highest most likely to top the slate. Also like a super low owned stack, and I know Lamar is expensive and Andrews and Brown are expensive, but I mean, these teams are priced up because they have a good chance of, you know, breaking the slate. And it was a little surprising last week to see such low ownership on two stacks that, you know, I think pretty clearly projected ahead of some of these lesser stacks. I don't really think we have that case this week. There's just no clear front-running team. Just could be something to pay attention to moving.
But I really think it's price sensitivity, and it's at the running back position. It's something that, Brandon, you brought up on the first episode, the first week, where, you know, you said that you were attacking cheaper running backs, that people are still in the mindset that I got to jam in three great running backs. And then if you're jamming in Zeke at 7,800 and you're jamming in a Dalvin Cook type of player, Derrick Henry, these 7K plus running backs, like your stack can't be a Chiefs stack. Your stack can't be an expensive Cowboys stack. And I think people are, from an ownership perspective, prioritizing the expensive running backs and disregarding expensive stacks, because then it makes you, you know, have to play Antonio Gibson or David Montgomery. Maybe he'll be chalked this week, but in the past, like guys that legitimately have 20 plus point ceilings, less probable, but it doesn't give you that, you know, comfortable feeling of jamming in, you know, guys like the McCaffreys and the Barkleys and those expensive running backs that you feel like, you know, if they get, I could get 25 points with these guys. The problem is that an 8K plus 25 points probably still doesn't win you a GPP. You kind of need 40 point ceilings out of those players, which you're more likely to get from the wide receivers. Would you agree with that, Brandon?
Yeah. Well, finally some vindication after being wrong for a couple of seasons, very strongly. I think that's the way the roster construction should go in big field GPP, is towards the wide receivers. And we're we're getting that now.
Because we've literally seen the past, like every week, like past 5 weeks, the winning Millie lineup or the winning slant lineup doesn't have the chalk running backs. Like you see the lineup construction and go, oh, they got enough points at running back and they got all the ceiling wide receivers. And even though the chalk running backs may have done okay, they weren't the linchpin of a winning GPP lineup.
Yeah, for sure. And I've always said that it's a bad roster construction mistake in big field tournaments to have a three pay up running backs. If you look at a long swath of data over seven, eight years, it's not a good construction, but people got in the habit of it because it was fairly strong for a couple seasons. In terms of ownership and people possibly making a mistake by not playing the chalkier games, I think you have to be exacting about what is the contest. If the contest for NFL have become so top heavy that I think it's fine to have the ownership spread. We can't say it's a mistake just because you're getting such incredible implied odds on first. It's even though it seems like the high total games are hitting week after week, I think we could say people are making a mistake if, say, it's a flat payout structure, but if it's the very steep payout structure that you might have in like a millionaire maker, we can't necessarily say they're making a mistake by avoiding these chalk games. But
right. But it's not, I mean, this is an NFL season where it like currently on this slate, I mean, we have an 11 game slate coming up. 5 out of the 11 games have 50 plus point totals. I mean, like we had a slate 2 weeks ago where more than half the games are high totals. We've been used to seeing where two games have 50 plus totals and the rest are hovering somewhere around 45, 46 range. And then it's like, okay, those are the two games to target. Now it seems like the ownership sometimes could end up being condensed over like a, we'll see on this slate where the Falcons-Vikings game, assuming that it plays, I know they had one COVID positive from an assistant coach. It looks like it's still on. So we're going to just treat it like it's still playing. Like that's going to be a game that people target. Yet, you know, you have four other choices of 50 plus point total games. So like, if you see the ownership tip too much towards one of them, like you have way more options as opposed to previous seasons where it's like, well, these are the two games people are targeting. If you're going to get off the board over there, you're significantly not being optimal by going to a game that has, you know, a total with the 6 points lower, which obviously there's a probability that happens. But I think it's more of a byproduct that we have a lot more high total games now that quote ownership in general, if it's spread out, doesn't matter as nearly as much, but we still see groupthink. I mean, we see groupthink every week where even if there's 5 high total games, like one just happens to be the chalk.
Well, let's jump right into it. So do we start with the highest total game or we start with
I'm going to start with the chalkiest game because technically it's not the highest total game.
Okay.
It opened as the highest total. So Falcons, Vikings, 56.5. It opened. It's now been bet down to 54.5. Dalvin Cook is not practicing today. It's expected he's going to be out. They have a bye, so it's most likely they'll rest him. Alexander Mattison has been priced up on DK to 7,200, but he still figures to be one of the chalkiest running backs on the slate because the Vikings run the ball so much, and who else is behind him? It's essentially you're getting Dalvin Cook at 7,200. Thielen is going to be double-digit owned. The only thing that I see in this game is that the Falcons side of the ball, I mean, Ridley will generate ownership, but he's expensive at 7,800. Do you see a path to stacking this? Because if you stack those guys, like, this is expensive as hell. And, like, at least for my style of play, expensive as hell and chalky is not the greatest of combinations that, you know, because it's leading myself to a very similar lineup construction where I don't think Cousins will be as owned as he should be in this game. And I think Ryan, I think the Falcons side may not. And I think people don't want to play those guys because, you know, they're not rushing type quarterbacks. And truthfully, they have a reputation of not being all that great. But, you know, with this game in the dome with a 54.5 total, I mean, it wouldn't put it past either of them to both have 300-yard games. So, Stuart, what do you see as far as the top stack type of probability, as well as, you know, we always talk about stack price. Like I'm a fan of the game. I'm not necessarily a fan of the like the 3+1 type of price on it.
Yeah, so we do have Minnesota as the most likely team to top the slate in terms of points scored at about 10%. That is coming in pretty low, like relative to previous weeks. I mean, we had the Chiefs most likely team to top the slate at 17%. So, you know, while you are getting kind of the top game, it still like is not quite as much of a front runner as some of the game, some of the teams we've seen in the past. And yeah, I mean, I think that note on price of the Minnesota side is a little concerning. I mean, so, you know, I am looking at just the cost of like Cousins, Jefferson, Thielen, which, you know, I don't think would really make that much sense, even independent of price. Like Thielen and Jefferson haven't correlated well. So I know it's been a small sample, but, you know, so far there's been a pretty strong negative correlation there. But yeah, I mean, it just seems like there's kind of cheaper stacks that can be acquired that have comparable probability to Minnesota. You know, Detroit is 1.1% less likely to top the slate, but are, you know, significantly cheaper than Minnesota, dropping down to teams like Miami or Tennessee, which are about 3 percentage points, you know, less likely to top the slate, but still just like have cumulative price that is way lower than Minnesota. I think to me at first glance, that seems to be the direction to go. It's as far as like a top, you know, team on the slate, there's just some really unintriguing properties about the Minnesota side, you know, price, poor correlation, and just like lack of distance from, you know, teams that are trailing them in terms of, you know, projected total.
How about the other side of the game? Because I think, like, if Madison's going to be chalky, like you could still play him. But how about? Because I don't see the ownership. I mean, I'm taking a look right now at our. I mean, this is initial projected ownership for a Thursday, and Ridley is coming in at 10%, and we got Gage there. Like, if Julio doesn't play, we still have our good friend Olamide Zaccheaus. He's only been priced up $200. Everyone played him last week, it seemed like. The Vikings' pass defense is worse. So, like, it's a cheap piece of a stack. Like, why can't I play Ryan, Ridley, Zaccheaus and get the Falcons' side of the ball and then pair them up with, you know, a kind of a chalk Madison and be different? Like, I'll be different than lineups that have Madison in it because most of the people that are going to play Madison are going to play him as a one-off. Or are they going to play him with just Ridley on the other side as like a 1-1 type of correlation? So, like, what do the Falcons figure? Because I think a lot of people are sour on Matt Ryan.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely passes the differentiation eye test. My concern with Atlanta is just they don't have, at least in our you know, projections as a Thursday, don't have a super high likelihood of, you know, just blowing up the slate. And I mean, look, that, you know, the same could be said last week for Pitt, Philadelphia. So, you know, it's not like these things are set in stone, but like we have them as a less than 4% chance of scoring the most points on the slate. So in that regard there, I think would be some concern that there's just not enough of a implied total to support a massive score.
But I mean, it's mitigated by the fact that Zaccheaus is 3,200 and then Ridley's going to be 10% owned and not 18% owned or something.
Yeah.
Like, no, I get you. I mean, it's, I don't like clicking Matt Ryan's name either. So like I get it completely, But Brandon, do you figure that this game being popular, is this like one of your top targets, or are you looking to avoid kind of the chalk in this game?
I'll be on it some. I haven't seen the Julio news today, but I would kind of expect him to be a favorite to play.
So what do you think of Julio? How why not playing him when everyone doesn't want to play him?
So I would, to me, like I would think as of today, I would say Julio is likely to play, and so Zacchaeus is off the board, and I would be willing to play him. Yeah, definitely I'd be willing to play him. On Minnesota side, the Thielen has the characteristics of a guy that has relatively tight distributions for a pay-up running back. So he's not the guy. He has had the 40-point slate-busting performance before, but that's not what you expect from him. You think a good day is that he catches 10 short passes and has one touchdown. So he's not ideal for the big field tournaments. You kind of want a guy with more firepower.
Would that be Jefferson then?
Yeah. So I would be more inclined to play Jefferson in this game. And the correlation with Thielen and Jefferson is -0.4, which is something to be concerned about. However, I wouldn't be afraid to play Cousins, Jefferson, Thielen, and then you would be basically trying to overcome the -0.4 correlation and playing for they get one more touchdown than expected. You know what I'm saying? Like just blow it away with magnitude so that the correlation doesn't matter. Where you have whatever, if they score 37, 38 points, then the negative correlation doesn't matter because the magnitude of the yardage and the touchdowns is high enough that, that both guys get there easily. So I would play for that in some lineups, but in the one-offs, I would much prefer Jefferson. Also in the eye test, he just looks like an explosive guy.
Well, in general, I mean we're talking about guys like Cousins and Ryan, which we classify as statue quarterbacks, right? They don't really get their ceilings through their legs. These are guys that need to put up 303 in order to kind of get more of a ceiling score. But we also have a slate that is pretty much filled with them. Like Lamar's, I mean, obviously he only rushed two times last week. I don't know if that's going to continue. We got Watson. He'll get some rushing yards. Do we see this as a week? I mean, Brandon, this is more for you because I know that you don't necessarily always double stack. But because a lot of these quarterbacks need to get there through yardage, are you more likely to double stack most of these stacks because of that? Or do you figure it's a week that it's possible that there's no one quarterback that puts up like a 40-point game, that a single stack's fine because like the top scoring quarterback may get 28 points. So the difference between 28 and 24 and 26 on a bunch of quarterbacks like doesn't matter as much.
I think the single stack is fine. It does make a big difference, like if you're doing a 1,000-person or a 200,000-person tournament. With a 1,000-person, you're more inclined to just single stack. And then with the 200,000, where you have to hit it just perfect, you have to have like QB1, then maybe you do it with a double stack. Yeah.
Well, talking about a good single stack game, I think, because it is the highest total on the game currently. It opened at 51.5. It's now been bet up to 55. It's Packers at Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Devontae Adams should be back. I mean, supposedly he was healthy last week. and he was kind of pissed off that he wasn't playing. Tampa Bay, I just got the practice reports. It seems like they're at full strength. Evans was at practice. Godwin was at practice. Fournette was at practice. Like, everyone seems to be practicing there. But, I mean, talk about expensive. I mean, Rodgers, Adams, and then Jones, these are expensive players. Brady, Godwin, Evans is pretty expensive. You got a kind of a two-headed, you know, Fournette's back, so you got the backfield in Tampa Bay that, you know, who knows how that's going to go with Ronald Jones. Obviously, the Packers, and we saw the last game, Jamal Williams was on the field almost as much as Aaron Jones. I don't find either of these teams to be that great for double stacking at their price, but like Stewart, as far as the high probability for these teams, I'm assuming they're high to be the highest scoring team on the slate, but like I don't see a contrarian way to build this game without it being like Rodgers, Adams, Godwin, like whoever stacks this game, it's maybe they throw an MVS. Maybe they throw in a Cameron Brate at tight end or something like that. But I just think that the target shares are condensed enough and the pieces are expensive enough that is this really, they may score the most points, but does the stack pay off?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like, certainly on the Green Bay side, I mean, there are pretty, you know, few options as far as, you know, where the fantasy points are going to be distributed through Green Bay. I don't know. Yeah. To me, and it's an expensive, you know, game as well, relative to, you know, expect likelihood of topping the slate. Like Green Bay is coming in at third, but really once you get past Detroit and Minnesota, there's like a bunch of, like a lot of bunching up around the, you know, 5-7% chance of topping the slate. And, you know, Green Bay and Tampa Bay are actually two of the more expensive teams, with kind of Baltimore in that mix as well. To me, it does feel like a bit more of like a pieces of this game, but not the stack type game. I mean, like Adams and Jones to me are both really compelling solo pieces. Both of those Tampa Bay pass catchers are compelling, you know, pieces from that side. Not really both in the same lineup, but
Would you consider in this game that those are like the most negatively correlated pieces that there are, like Adams and Jones, as well as Godwin and Evans. So like that double stack or using two of them, just especially at their prices, seems to be just completely out of the question.
Yes. I'm saying, yeah, totally off the table in terms of pairing them in the same lineup. But I do think there is like this, you know, matrix of like kind of 2x2, really, like two on the Tampa Bay side, Evans, Godwin, two on the Green Bay side, Jones, Adams, where there's just good opportunity to not take the entire game or go like single stack, I guess. But I think I prefer the route of not going with the quarterbacks from this game, but just using the skill players as part of a secondary cross game stack that, you know, you're using around a more conventional like 2-1 stack from other games, because I mean the total would suggest like there is, you know, plenty of kind of fantasy goodness into this game. It's just really expensive and there's a lot of negatively correlated pieces such that, yeah, I think it makes sense to take those individual pieces as kind of not so much one-offs, but I guess like a secondary stack among skill players, or, you know, maybe go skinny stack. I think the skinny stack to me makes more sense from the Green Bay side with just Adams, Rodgers, keep it simple, than the Tampa Bay side. But I don't know. I would imagine that what are the ownership projections suggest on Rodgers, Adams? That seems to me like it could be pretty popular play.
Well, I mean, it's going to really depend on lineup construction. We have Adams currently at like 10%. Oh. We have Godwin. I mean, they're not going to be like high owned 10%. Like somewhere in the 10% range. But Brandon, I'm assuming that this game may be more appealing single stack wise, like 2+1 in smaller field contests, where like you don't mind that. Like you could take Rodgers, Adams, Godwin, and they could all put up ceilings to win, you know, a 500-person, 1,000-person tournament. But like, do you think that they at their prices have the ceiling to win, you know, something that is more like a 200,000-person tournament?
Yeah, I think this game could be interesting there for the for the really big field.
But would you have to play a secondary piece? Would you have to play an MVS? Would you have to do a double stack? Because I wouldn't want to play like Godwin and Evans together. So do you like throw in Gronk? Do you throw in Justin Watson if he's back? Like start from one of the cheap guys in order to get like a Brady 400 yard game, four touchdowns. Like that, to me, that's what I'm thinking of when it comes to large field. But like 303 is like good for small field. And then you just pretty much want the one guy that got the 100 yards and a touchdown or two, and you don't need the secondary guy.
Yeah. I mean, my take is why not on Godwin and Evans? Because the why not take both? Like, we have the correlation at negative 0.21, okay? And that's not ideal, but if you just think about how that went down, okay? Last year, I watched a lot of those games.
Oh, you're on team watch the tape. Uh-oh.
Stuart and I were both strongly of the view that you have to watch and understand the structure of things, not just do the data. You have to put the two together. And someone more knowledgeable about football might be able to tell me structurally why you can't play Evans and Godwin together. But for me, watching those games, by chance, it came through that every week the winning lineup had either Evans or Godwin. That's just how it went last year, right? Like every week, not every single week, but most weeks, one of those guys put in a huge performance. And there was basically no predicting which one it was going to be week by week. It went like that. So the result was the negative correlation, but watching those games, it just seemed to go that way. Like there was no structural reason why they couldn't both have a big game. It just kind of went that way. So in this case, I wouldn't necessarily have the negative correlation fully turn me off. And again, might be willing to play it. Just playing magnitudes, like hoping that they have one touchdown above expectation. So for me, Brady, Godwin, and Evans seem fine. Maybe Brady is going to be a little bit perturbed by his mistake on prime time, and this is get right spot. And then on the Green Bay side, I think it's interesting because Tampa is number one against the run in the data, and then also eyeball test. Like they just look like a really good defense. And so you would think like attack by the pass, because they're middling there. And it's complicated by the fact that Aaron Jones is sort of the dual threat running back, like the ultimate dual threat running back. And like you could see him making it happen, just getting some passes that he turns into stuff. I think it's an intriguing game. You definitely want to be involved.
Okay. So before we talk about some of these other games, I just want to tell everyone out there about the FanDuel single entry series that we're hosting here at Roto Grinders, because it's back for this year, week 6 through 13. So they're all single entry contests at three different buy-in levels, $5, $33, $100. You can go in the FanDuel lobby right now and you could enter them. The top four combined scores count within each buy-in tier. So you don't have to play every week, but the top four, the four best weeks, those best scores, the top two finishers in each tier advance to a six-man $20,000 final that's put up by RotoGrinders. So go to FanDuel right now. Go to their lobby and enter. These are single-entry contests, flat payout structures, so they're really good, beneficial to the players, and join the FanDuel single entry series. Let's go to our next game that's on the board. That figures, I think we may have like one piece in this game may be popular, but based on our current ownership projections, it really depends on injuries. It's the Lions and the Jaguars. This is being played in Jacksonville, so not in the Dome. It was opened at a 52.5 total. It's now up to a 54. Injury status on the Jaguars, Chark and Chenault are questionable. I'm guessing Chark is leaning more towards doubtful and Chenault is leaning more towards probable, but we're not going to know. Galladay figures to be one of the highest owned wide receivers in this game because the Lions have a 28.5 implied total. Stafford is still figures to be one of the more owned quarterbacks, but obviously the Lions have a three-headed monster running back situation that feel free to predict who's going to be running the ball between Peterson, Johnson, and Swift. And then you have the problem with the Jacksonville side. While James Robinson, he's getting most of the backfield work, Jacksonville could throw the ball to like nine different guys. So like, even if you were going to stack the Lions, like who do you run it back with? And if you stack the Jaguars, good luck to you, because you're going to have to pick the two guys that get all the points. I think this is much more appealing if Chark is out, because then at least the pieces are cheaper. But Stuart, what do you see on probability wise? I know the Lions have to be up there, but how well does the Lions correlate with Jacksonville, in which, like, I would want personally, I would think in terms of, well, why don't I just play James Robinson at 6,800? Because he has been getting more work in the passing game, and the Lions are considered one of the worser type of run defenses. That why can't I just, who cares about the receivers, and just play, Stafford, Galladay, Jones, Robinson, and why can't I do that 3+1?
Yeah, that actually sounds pretty reasonable to me. I mean, Detroit, like you said, really bad against the run. And if I remember correctly from last year, they were actually really ineffective against running backs in a passing role. Like, they were kind of like Falcons light in a way, in that they funneled a lot of passing volume to opposing running backs and allowed running backs to catch passes at a pretty efficient clip last year. So I think that's an interesting approach. Like you said, I mean, Detroit is bubbling towards the top of likely teams atop the slate at an 8.9% chance. Their price tag, I think, is really appealing to me. Like, they are significantly cheaper than Minnesota and Green Bay, but then have a pretty good shot of, scoring the most points on the slate.
Do Galladay and Jones negatively correlate to one another?
Yeah, they do, and it's I don't think it's like insanely strong, but
0.45.
Oh, okay, yeah. So that actually is very strong. Like, that is maybe more so than Evans and Godwin, like unlikely to kind of succeed in conjunction. I think the guy, when I was looking through it, that seems like a decent fit. He doesn't have positive correlation with either receiver, but he has more or less neutral correlation, is Hockenson. I'm not sure kind of what the popularity of Hockenson will be, but if you're telling
he's expensive. So, I mean, his ownership is going to be, we have him at 8% currently projected owned. I'm assuming Hockenson at 5,300 at tight end is going to be more likely to appear in a stack than as a one-off.
Yeah, sure.
But are you saying that if we play a 3+1, it would be better to do Stafford plus Galladay plus Hawk or Jones plus Hockenson rather than Galladay and Jones in the wide receiver slots?
Correct. And we talk about it, and I know you talk about it a lot, Jordan, is just like with all these stacks, if there was one stack, like there's never going to be a stack that checks all the boxes, right? There's never going to be a stack that, is good value. Associated with that is probably high likelihood of, breaking the slate, low ownership and exceptional correlation. Like, those type of stacks really don't come around very often.
And when they come around, they're 1,000,000% owned.
Exactly right. So, it at the end of the day, like, you kind of have to be willing to, secede one of those features. And like a stack like, you know, Hockenson, Galladay, Stafford, or well, like just Hockenson, actually just focusing on Hockenson, like, yeah, I don't think he's really at a very good price point, but, you know, you might have to be willing to accept kind of lower median value to gain access to, you know, more leverage. And I don't know, to me, the correlation properties of Hockenson, even though I don't think he really projects great as a median value, you know, allow him to be, at least in my mind, a pretty reasonable fit as part of like a Stafford Galladay Hockenson or Stafford Jones Hockenson. Figuring out the Jacksonville side and kind of this Detroit, Detroit side tends to correlate pretty well with the opposition. So like I have an aggregate correlation of Stafford Hockenson Galladay correlation with opponent kind of cumulative offensive fantasy production at 0.19. So that's pretty decent. Like it's kind of more correlative than Minnesota, less correlative than Green Bay or Tennessee. It's kind of, you know, it's middling, not good, not bad. The Jacksonville side, I think, is going to be interesting and tough. I mean, James Robinson, I think your hypothesis there with like, you know, just a good matchup and, you know, him being probably the most projectable in terms of his role makes sense.
I just like the ownership on Jacksonville because those receivers right now, like mm-hmm. we have Chenault at like 2% owned. We have Keelan Cole. Obviously, they may gain some more popularity, not like absurd popularity. They'll still be single-digit owned when Chark, if he gets ruled out. Because then it'll be like, okay, there's one less mouth to feed. But Brandon, I know you didn't mind playing Godwin and Evans together in the last game. Do you mind playing Galladay and Jones together?
Well, here I do think maybe the tight end pairing is more viable just because we have it like modest positive correlation, Galladay and Hockenson, and slightly negative correlation with Jones and Hockenson. But since it is pretty strong between Jones and Galladay, I think you're better off just doing the tight end pairing, especially that Galladay Hockenson. And Hockenson has the type of characteristics where he's not just like a fall in the end zone for one touchdown kind of guy. Like he could have a big day. So he's a good guy. Like he could easily be the tight end one. So I think that's the better way to play it.
And I think in this game, Marvin Jones Jr. is one of the best leverage plays on the entire slate. He's Galladay. We have currently projected owned at over 20%. Marvin Jones 6%. If most people are stacking Stafford, they're probably stacking him with Galladay. And with the huge negative correlation between them, playing Jones as a one-off, like if we've seen Marvin Jones have 3 or 4 touchdown games where like he's the guy that goes off and he's the only guy, that disparity of ownership and his price at 5,100, like I think that's a good opportunity to get exposure to the game and get extra relative value from your opponents if Galladay does fail at 20%+. Another popular game. This is going to be a popular game. I'm not sure why. I get why. I think it's a lot of recency bias in this game. Texans, Titans opened at 55. It's now at 53. I mean, it's a 3.5-point spread. The Titans are favored by 3.5 with a 28.25 team total. Texans 25.75. Watson will be one of the most owned quarterbacks on the slate. People will go back to Brandon Cooks at 5,000. Will Fuller isn't really generating all that much ownership, but Derrick Henry is going to be owned. AJ Brown, especially we want to see what happens with Corey Davis and Adam Humphries. I believe they were taken off the COVID list, but we're not sure if they're going to play, but AJ Brown, especially if they don't play, AJ Brown is still going to be owned at 5,600 on DraftKings. Even if everyone's healthy, Derrick Henry is going to come in at double digit ownership. I don't understand the popularity of this game with the pieces the way that they are, that in comparison to what we've just talked about, because you would go like Watson, Fuller, Cooks, Watson, Fuller, Akins, I'm assuming he's back. Then you have the Tennessee. You shouldn't be playing Tannehill and Henry together. So you're either just playing Henry. But typically in Henry ceiling games, like the game doesn't get there. It's Henry. It's the clock's running. And I know he has a good price at 7,300, but it's hard for me to see playing a 3+1 with Henry as the running back. I mean, I say that about like Jacobs also, like those workhorse type running backs where the game stack just doesn't get there. So like, maybe Stuart, am I being a little bit crazy to say that this game may be a little overowned?
Well, so do you think most of the popularity will be on the Houston side?
No. Well, I think Watson will be popular. Okay. I think Henry will be popular, and I think AJ Brown will be popular. Hmm. And then obviously, the more popular a quarterback gets, that means that people want to stack with him. And the more popular that one side of a game gets, they want to run back with them. So, like, it's a natural kind of correlation of ownership where, like, hey, if 18% of people are playing Watson, it's not like Cooks and Fuller are sitting there at 3% owned. They have to be owned because people in GPPs aren't just playing naked quarterbacks usually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not that interested in the Houston side. I think the Tennessee side, like, to me, if, like, that to me is the intriguing side. I mean, like, I have, you know, just like Tannehill, Brown, Jonnu Smith is a pretty reasonably priced stack for a team that, you know, is in the top, you know, five or six teams in terms of likelihood to score the most points on the slate. And I mean, they have really excellent correlation properties. The average correlation between those three guys is 0.3. Like, that's very strong for, you know, a triangle of quarterback, receiver, receiver. And they have really good correlation with those three guys have good correlation with opposing offenses. So to me, I don't know. I hadn't really considered the Houston side that much.
Well, I mean, I'm even talking about the Titans side. So like Stuart, for instance, we could both agree that the passing and running games for the Titans are negatively correlated to one another, right?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. We have AJ Brown at 20% projected owned. We have Derrick Henry at about 20% projected owned. Most likely, the lineups that have AJ Brown don't have Derrick Henry. The lineups that have Derrick Henry don't have AJ Brown. So if each of them are 20% owned, that means there's 40% of the lineups have one of the bigger pieces of the Titans on an 11-game slate that if the Titans don't get there, either way, through running or passing, I'm talking about ceiling-wise, like you burn 40%. I mean, you burn 40% of the lineups in a contest. Like if it was one of those things where both wide receivers were owned, like we've seen that with the Panthers, it's like, okay, but that's a stack. I get it. Because if Robbie Anderson's owned, most likely that lineup may also have DJ Moore and Bridgewater, okay? So it's still, like, they each are owned 20%, but the overlap is only, like, 17% of the, you know, like, combined. But I don't see Henry and Brown lineups coming together. So that's when I'm talking about over-owned, with Watson being owned, Cooks being double digits, like if this game fails, it's quite possible, especially in, like, large field GPPs, that half the lineups are burned.
Yeah, so that's how I view it. It's not likely to fail. I mean, Henry.
So you're doing it anyway.
He's in a smash spot. Like, yeah, granted, he's not your big field GPP guy most weeks, but his price is pretty good. And like, he's in a phenomenal spot. He's very likely to smash.
So we talk about AJ Brown, you mean?
No, Derrick Henry.
Derrick Henry. Well, yeah. Okay. Okay.
Second worst run defense in the league, and Henry, it's one of the highest total Tennessee games of the year. Henry, he looked fine on Tuesday. Like everything is go. Like he's probably going to smash.
Yeah, but what would you stack with him? I mean, like I could see Derrick Henry as a one-off play, but would you play Watson, Cooks, Fuller type of thing on the other side of the game?
No, I almost never do that.
Okay, so I'm thinking of the game as a whole. And then also, Brandon, it's a $7,300 running back. I thought you wanted, you like the cheapo running backs, vomit running backs.
So pricey this week. That's not so pricey this week. That's not 9,000 or 10,000.
Okay.
I mean, so
better play like on FanDuel always, but I think he's even pricier over there.
Stuart, you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like, so if AJ Brown is, you know, 20%, would it not? Yeah, I don't know. I guess I have no further. It's interesting that we're all kind of having very differing views on this game. Be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Right. But I mean, the style of play that I play is very leverage heavy stuff. So I take a look and I go like, it's not because this, I see the ownership of this game, but it's like not stack related. Like you're either playing one side of the game or the other side of the game or the running game. And then I'm just thinking in my head, what happens if a meteor hits this game? Like, okay, I have 10 other games to choose from now and half the lineups are dead. So like that's how I view play. Cause of course I'm playing large field tournaments. So that's how I view it of, cause typically I would find leverage the opposite way. It would be the type of thing where Tannehill and Brown was owned and Henry was under owned. Or Henry was mega owned and the passing game is unowned. And I'd be like, well, if that's going to be chalk, I'm going to play the same team, just in a different route. But both sides are popular. And like, I just view it as like, yeah, I could play Henry as a one-off. That's right. I could play AJ Brown as a one-off. But this like stack combination, just like half the lineups are going to have a Titans or a Texans player in an 11 game slate. And like, I'd rather just, I'll take advantage of the time it fails, even though I admit, Brandon, it's a smash spot. So it's a high probability spot, but I'm playing for the times that it doesn't work out.
All right, next game.
Okay, here's a game that I don't get. It's one of, Stuart, we have one of our famous, the I don't get games. Because we had it with the Titans-Vikings game a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Where I look at the total and go, why is it this high? Brown Steelers, 51 total. When I think of Brown Steelers, I think of 44 total. I look at like what Kareem Hunt, OBJ. We have to see what the status of Deontay Johnson is. He's actually pretty cheap, 4,900. You know, flavor of the week, Chase Claypool still out there. James Conner, 7,100. Based on the stack probability, the top team probability, like, am I just nuts to think like it's a 51 total game and like why?
No, man, I think that makes sense. Cleveland wasn't kind of registering in we have them at 3.2% chance of topping the slate. Pittsburgh slightly better at 6.3, but yeah, it does seem a little odd, I guess. Historically, Pittsburgh's like offense and you know their coordinator down there, Fitchner, has been like really good from kind of a air yards aired out perspective, but I don't know, it feels like this team's a little different this year and Roethlisberger's aging a good bit. I mean, I don't know, it's a game I hadn't considered super strongly,
but we have to at a 51 total. We always talk about these high total games and I'm like, do I want to I look at this game and I go, okay, Ben Roethlisberger, Deontay Johnson, and what, Juju's too expensive. I mean, like, how do I stack that? Ebron, and then on the other side, okay, I can run it back with OBJ, or then let's say I play Kareem Hunt, but I'm like, do I want to play a running back against the Steelers defense? Not real. I mean, not at mid 6Ks. I mean, I guess I could. So it's like, I just look at this game and go, like, I'm not sure how I would stack it. And then also, like, even as the one-offs, I'm not all that. That Deontay Johnson at 4,900, if he's healthy, like, okay, I could see playing that. But it's one of those things where no one's going to stack. It's a 51 total, and the ownership on this game is virtually, like, single digit. Brandon, do you see anything in this game that would appeal to you that says that even with a 51 total, that this is the game that you're going to need in GPPs?
I think it's more like one-offs. I'm interested in some one-offs. I think that James Conner could have a big day. So it could happen. It's not like super, super likely, but I do like him as a one-off. Ride the motivated Odell. I don't mind. Kareem Hunt, probably won't have too much Kareem Hunt. But
you're not going to go back to Claypool? Do you think he's going to be overowned?
I don't know.
Let's say if Deontay Johnson is out, is Claypool a play at 5,200?
Sorry, go ahead, Brandon.
Stuart, you tackle that one.
Sure. Well, I mean, you've really, I think for me, Jordan, made a really salient point in recent weeks that, like, we can't overreact to how players perform in, like, relief duty following an injury. I mean, I think my, you know, I see these kind of large volume shares for, you know, players that are having an ascendant role because of an injury. And then kind of that first week in a full game planned, you know, game, they kind of fail. I mean, we saw it with Zacchaeus last week. Drew Sample, I think we've talked about on the show. I mean, there's just
Hamler also for the Broncos.
There's just so many guys this year who have like had a solid game in kind of relief duty. And then, they come in the next game where their team has a full game plan and, you know, they're invisible or just their role is clearly reduced. And like, I don't know. Claypool certainly has looked the part from just a like efficiency standpoint so far this year. But I mean, you have to wonder. I mean, Deontay Johnson's been kind of a target hog. Like, how many of those kind of plays that were dialed up for Claypool last week were, you know, that are plays that, like, obviously, if Johnson plays, are going to be plays for Johnson, or if Johnson's deemed out early in the week, are going to be, you know, schemed away from Johnson Claypool and scheme towards, you know, Ebron or Juju, who I agree is extremely, you know, overpriced, or, you know, Connor or something like that. I don't know, something to be wary of. I haven't, you know, followed the Steelers and kind of the dynamics of that team super closely, but it is kind of a fallacy that I have fallen into at times this year. And I know multiple times on the show, you've kind of pointed out that, you know, players succeeding in relief duty doesn't necessitate that they're going to have, you know, that same role in future weeks when, you know, team has a full week to game plan. So I don't know, I might be a little wary of that. And like, Claypool was priced up a decent bit. You know, I think the thing with Zacchaeus last week was that his price didn't move. You know, Claypool's priced up a good bit this week. And I don't know, I don't have a super strong opinion on kind of what his ownership would be, but if it's
right, we have him currently projected as a 7%, which if Johnson's and this is, let me just make sure.
If Johnson's out, that would probably go up.
No. This is without Johnson in.
Oh, so really?
Without Johnson in, it's 7% at 5,200. I'm assuming Johnson at 4,900. Brandon, I mean, if it goes back to the way that it was, assuming that Deontay Johnson could stay on the field, you'd have to consider him at 4,900 in a game with a 51 total, and the Steelers with a 27.25 implied total to be a reasonable, like, in the 4K range. Like, why wouldn't you play him?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is a game for sprinkles. You pick your spots, and I think that's certainly a fine one with good upside.
Can we trademark that? Is that a technical term? Game for sprinkles?
Yeah. You can adopt it if you want.
I'd want to take someone. You could adopt vomit stacks if you want, but apparently you don't like playing vomit stacks. You like playing the most expensive receivers together. I don't. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of games that are under 50. Are there any ones that stand out to you that we should be looking at from a top probability perspective? Because I think the Dolphins, Brian Fitzpatrick is going to be one of the highest owned quarterbacks on the slate.
I'm going to be so mad if Gaskin is high owned because.
Oh, no, we'll get into that.
Stuart and I both have been high on Gaskin, and I watch the Miami games. I live in Miami, and
No, I'm with you. We're all three
going to be on Gaskin, and it's going to be frustrating if it's a popular play.
No, I don't think Gaskin's going to be as popular. I think the passing game. Ryan Fitzpatrick figures to be possibly the most owned quarterback on the slate. His natural stacking partner is Parker. Secondary stacking partner would be Williams or Gesicki, which if that is the popular three-man stack, it's going to naturally decline the ownership of Gaskin. And me personally, like, if this stack's going to be popular, I'm going to go over. I'm with you guys. Like, especially when we have, like, if we take a look at the running backs on this slate, we'll have a very chalky David Montgomery at 5,800 against a horrible Carolina Panthers rushing attack. Madison, assuming that Cook's out, he's going to be chalk. Mike Davis at 7K is obviously underpriced. He's going to be chalky at running back. Derrick Henry is going to get 20% of the ownership there. And we have Myles Gaskin currently projected at 14% owned. But I think the difference between like Gaskin and Montgomery, like, is not Gaskin against the Jets versus Montgomery at the Panthers. I know you could say that the Jets have a better run defense, but Gaskin catches like 5 or 6 passes out of the backfield. And if Howard is inactive again, Gaskin's going to see pretty much all of the goal line work in a game where they have 4 touchdown implied total. Like, I want to see Fitz and Parker be high owned because I want to play a ton of Gaskin. But Stuart, what is this one? Is the Dolphins up there as far as top stack probability?
Yeah, I mean, so like similarly, how we're talking about, I forget which team, maybe Detroit, how, you know, they check some boxes, but not all. Like, Miami checks the likelihood of topping the slate box, 7.4%. That's fourth on the slate as of, I think, updates I made this morning. The combination of Fitzpatrick, Gesicki, Parker is pretty reasonably priced at 17.7K. That is going to be cheaper than, like, you know, pretty much majority of Green Bay, Minnesota, even like Tampa stacks. And those three guys have really good correlation. The average correlation between those three parts is 0.67. I mean, that's insane. That's probably the highest kind of triangular stack correlation on the slate, at least of these teams that are kind of relevant from a total standpoint. It checks those boxes, but if you say that it's going to be like Fitzpatrick is going to be the most owned quarterback, you know, that is one component in which the stack kind of has flaws. I think the ultimate question is always like, which of these components are most important and which do we as players feel most comfortable leaning on? I think Miami checks the box in terms of a performance and kind of correlation standpoint, but you know, as you suggested, might fail in terms of ownership.
And also, who do you run it back with? They're playing the Jets.
Yeah.
You pay 6K for Crowder as a run back in that stack. Jeff Smith, I mean, he got a ton of targets and did nothing with them, but Perriman may be back. So who knows? I mean, we're talking about the Jets. So like, that's why I view this game as like, I want that stack to be high owned. I don't have to worry about a run back, and I just play Myles Gaskin, and hopefully he gets 25-plus points. Right, Brandon, you're on the Gaskin bandwagon, right?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, we agree on something. Okay. Vomit running back, we agree on.
So not vomit. Gaskin's a good running back.
Oh, but he's cheap. Vomit just means cheap. That's all. Oh, okay. That's all it means. It's nothing personal. You could be good vomit. So is this more of a Gaskin and bust? Like, are we taking Jet Sprinkles as a run back?
I don't know. There's not too many compelling pieces. I mean,
Jeff Smith's 3,000. Why not? He got like, 11 targets last week.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the return of Perriman. I mean, what, he played like every single snap last time he played a full game.
Why don't we take Perriman then?
Yeah, could be a decent option. I don't know.
But have you ever needed – but the question comes in, is that has a Jets player been needed on a slate? Like, it rarely happens.
About, I think, in consecutive weeks on the show, how Fitzpatrick, like, doesn't really – Fitzpatrick's ceiling games aren't necessarily correlated with exceptional performances by the offense. And, I mean, God, no team has let down as a return piece of like a game stack than the Jets. So like, I don't know if you are thinking about stacking the game and eating the ownership, you know, maybe thinking about not bringing it back with the Jet side, I think could also be viable.
So Brandon, are there any other games that are under a 50 point total that you have your eye on?
Let me scroll real quick.
So we have Bengals Colts in the dome. I mean, we have Giants Washington, but that's a 42 total. I think the Broncos Patriots game is I don't see what you do in that game. I think the Bears Panthers, I mean, you get some Robbie Anderson ownership. You'll get Mike Davis and Allen Robinson, kind of like a 1-1 type of combination there. But like,
yeah, as always, you've got Baltimore.
Do you believe that Lamar's not rushing anymore? Like he's injured or like, because his ownership's going to come down. People are on board with why is Lamar priced this much if he's going to only rush twice? Obviously, because I'm playing 100 lineups, so like I could burn five of them on maybe Lamar. If he's going to come in, I mean, I'm going to check right now. Our current ownership projections have him at 8%. I mean, at 7,700, if this was last year, you'd jam him in at 8% ownership. I mean, because he would normally be like 8,200 and still be 17% owned. He has natural stacking partners with Brown and Andrews. Do you believe that Lamar still has the rushing floor, even though they have not shown it this year?
Whenever you have cheap pieces on the slate, you want to consider Lamar, Andrews, Brown. Because those pieces do correlate very well and they just have great characteristics for tournaments because Lamar has a reasonable probability of being QB1 in any given week. He also has historically he has a possibility of like substantially outpacing all other QBs. So being QB1 by a lot, I don't know what you call that. It's like, I don't know, a Dustin or a Rory where they win and they can win by a lot.
He could legitimately have a 300 yard passing game and a 100 yard rushing game.
And so it's nice that he correlates well with Andrews and Brown because Andrews, he's usually the highest priced tight end or close to it. And he also has a reasonable probability of being the tight end one. So you hit the right week and you have the QB1 and the tight end one, which is super valuable. And then kind of what you're going for is Brown to have that one flash play and a couple other things going. So you want Brown to post 25 and then you have the tight end one and the QB1. It's super valuable as a combo. And so I think you always want to consider it whenever the low priced pieces elsewhere are reasonable, and they are reasonable this week.
Then what do you do on the other side? Because the Eagles,
you don't have to. That's the beauty of it. Like, really, it's you're playing the correlation, the fact that all of those guys can put up big points. And in particular, you're playing to win the QB1 and tight end position. You don't need a run back.
Because we've seen RG3 in the fourth quarter of games. So, like, I know there are some people out there that are like, how do we not have a Ravens run back? Because if they put up, you know, if they have a four touchdown lead, like they put on the brakes. But I mean, but like you said, and I mentioned earlier before, Lamar has a ceiling. I mean, we don't have Kyler Murray on the slate. We don't have, you know, Dak on the slate. We don't have Mahomes on the slate. We don't have a lot of like the higher ceiling quarterbacks on the slate that Lamar historically, in comparison to these statue quarterbacks, like could outscore them by 20 points. And then we also have a slate where the tight end position is horrible. No Kittle, no Kelsey, no Waller. That Andrews is the top tight end. So you do make, you know, the perfect point that if you get a, even if you get a Lamar 70 yard rushing game with two passing touchdowns and a rushing touchdown, and he could put up, 34 points and be 10 points clear of all the other quarterbacks. Andrews could be 10 points clear of all the other tight ends. And then does it matter that you have, you know, the 18 point guy from the Eagles, and especially for a team like the Eagles, with their injuries and how many players they have run in Hightower, Fulgham, Ertz. I mean, they've so many pieces. Who are you going to choose? That maybe there's no one on the Eagles that even puts up a ceiling anyway, even if the Eagles do stay competitive in that game.
Yeah, you don't need the run back.
So, Stuart, how do the Ravens stack up in the top probability?
Yeah, I mean, so they're up there actually just behind Miami. And like Brandon said, correlation properties are excellent for Baltimore, particularly those three guys, Brown, Andrews, Jackson. Yeah, they're just expensive. But like you said, you know, that might be kind of the trade-off you have to be willing to make because, yeah, you would expect them to be quite low-owned. I mean, they were low-owned last week with a much higher total. And, you know, Lamar kind of put up a dud. You know, this week I would expect it to come down even more. And you know,
are there any other games that we didn't mention that are in that like middling range that just, you know, just don't appear to be in a good spot, but at least are somewhat equitable to, you know, like a Dolphins, you know, that like 5-6% range?
In Indianapolis, we're projecting.
Oh, Philip Rivers, oh God.
Yeah. Like that's the thing, and you know they have a decent total, but you know the pieces there are not super compelling.
Rivers, Hilton, it's like the old dust team.
Yeah,
right.
Trey Burton, I think, is an interesting, like, you know, one, but it's like, you know, I wouldn't consider stacking up this game, but like Trey Burton has seen since returning a pretty good target share. You know, could be an interesting kind of solo piece from that game, but.
No, this is the vomit stack. This is the vomit stack, Stuart. We finally got to it. Rivers, Hilton's 5,000. Burton's 3,100. The run back is T. Higgins at 4,700. There you go. There's the vomit. See, the problem is I want to play the cheap running back. So, like, why am I playing a vomit stack? That's the problem. Like, if I'm playing Henry, Davis, and Devontae Adams, maybe they're playing in the dome. Cardi loves the dome. So, I may go with the. You know, typically the blitz over projects domes. So maybe I burn a couple of lineups and hopefully Dusty Rivers and Dusty Hilton get there.
Seems unlikely, but it's not.
I love your face. Your face is like, okay, that's your money. You could feel free to do it if you want. If you want to burn a $5-$3 play action, $15 would be much better off spent at like Panera Bread.
No, it does seem like every week there are a few of these teams, like the Colts are one, the 49ers and the Patriots, you know, another team that are kind of in there. It's just like their totals are always pretty decent, but it's just you don't have a ton of conviction in the plays that would get you there from a stacking standpoint.
Zach Pascal isn't considered a sprinkle? I can't sprinkle Zach Pascal?
You could. I mean, I don't know. Mixon, I think, could be worth a sprinkle. I had put something up from our Twitter account. Like, I've always been kind of anti-Mixon in a game that you figure the Bengals are unlikely to be competitive in. But last week, I mean, they were down, you know, three scores for three quarters. And Mixon actually had a season high in targets, was on the field relative to Gio Bernard, like, way more than he has been in previous games. Like, I think usually a losing script would just totally sink Mixon, but not sure if it was just you know, one game sample noise, but you know, Mixon has seemed to enter a little bit more of a prominent passing role than he has occupied really to date. So you know, could be an interesting kind of single piece, but Yeah, no, I think we covered kind of the core games that we want to focus on.
Okay, so Brandon, any further notes on this slate before we get out of here?
No, that's about it. You could take your chances on like N'Keal Harry at New England. New England maybe puts up some points, but yeah.
So that's a sprinkle. So that's a sprinkle game also.
Yeah, sprinkle.
Okay, that's a sprinkle game. Okay. We have our vomit stacks, our sprinkle games, and our high total games, and avoiding the negative correlations unless you say that it doesn't matter because the magnet, they'll score a million points. It doesn't matter anymore, right?
That's it.
Stuart, the latest at Advanced Sports Analytics, any new tools, any new things that people should know about?
Yeah, not really. We just updated. We had like a free access raw data like download tool that people could use. And we have that for really the four major sports that we had not refreshed to date this year. So we actually just put that up. So, you know, most of our stuff is paywalled, but if you are interested in, you know, using the same raw data that we use for our tools and stuff, you can access that in the NFL drop-down menu. And yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. Just like, it seems like across the industry, there just seems to be a lot more interest in working with data and, you know, modeling and visualizing data. So if, you know, there's anyone who is interested in like getting their hands dirty with raw data and developing, you know, some work of their own and has, you know, questions about, you know, how to get started on some stuff like that, you know, email, our website email is a pretty good place to reach us, and are happy to engage a little bit with some people who are interested in kind of doing some of the programming themselves. So that is something that's free that people could check out. They are interested in some of the tools that, you know, we are using to discuss some of the data points for this show. You know, we have single week and single month subscriptions. So you know, feel free to check those out.
And that's at advancedsportsanalytics.com. And you can check out a Core 4 premium RotoGrinder subscription, rotogrinders.com/media/ASA. That link in the description gets you $5 off your first month. Core 4 sports, NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, Lineup HQ access. I use Lineup HQ. It has all the information here, ownership, projections, build your lineups, build 100 large field lineups. I'll build all my vomit stacks. I'll add all my sprinkles. I'll get it all in. And hopefully, you know, I get to the top of the $3 and a million person field contest where you need to find the Travis Fulgham of the slate. But you can get that rotogrinders.com/media/ASA. The link is in the description. So for Stuart Gibson, for Brandon Adams, for gracing the presence with us this week, if I don't win contests this week, I hope it's one of you guys. And if it couldn't be the three of us, I hope it's one of you guys out there that are listening or viewing to the show. So I'm Jordan Cooper, and this has been the Advanced Sports Analytics Show on rotogrinders.com. We'll be right back.